Okay, now I'll begin. So have you ever had an idea? And you thought, wow, that was a great idea. That's new. That's novel. That's unique. Wow, I'm so smart. I came up with a great idea. And then you find out a little bit later, kind of like many things, there's nothing new under the sun, and somebody else had the idea first. That's happened to me a couple times as I have thought of ideas on what to speak on, message topics, approaches to messages, and it happened this time as I was putting this this message together. I had this idea, and I thought, oh, that's interesting, and then as I started to do some research, I as I often do, I go to lifehopeandtruth.com and kind of do some searching and looking for things to help put the message together, and sure enough, I found almost the exact topic covered in something there that was on the website. And my first reaction was, well, I was a little disappointed. I'm like, oh man, I thought I had this great idea. I thought I was brilliant and smart. And then I thought about it a little longer and tried to put my pride aside, and I decided, well, actually, it's a good idea. It's good that my idea was already there. And I looked at it from a couple perspectives. One, maybe it means that I read this before, and I'm actually remembering it. Didn't quite remember all the connections at first, but maybe I studied this. In fact, I know that I did. And then some number of years later, kind of came back to me, so that's a good thing. Also, I thought, well, if our church leadership and those who are in charge of Life, Hope, and Truth are publishing material that lines up with this message, that probably means there's some value there. So I actually am glad that my topic was covered on, was already been covered. So my message, we'll title this, Six Christian Growth Lists. And these lists are covered in a Life, Hope, and Truth Bible study course. Specifically, it's in lesson number 10, which is titled The Process of Christian Conversion. If you haven't taken the time to go through these Bible study courses, highly recommend it. It's been maybe too long since I've gone through it. Maybe it's worth a refresher, but very good courses. Lesson number 10, so again, this one is on the process of Christian conversion. This lesson has a great flow in covering what that conversion process looks like. It starts with part one that's about spiritual enlightenment. So we start to become aware at some point in our life. We become maybe aware of God, depending on our background. We become aware of sin. We become aware of right and wrong. And maybe even some of those things we know, but we at some point become aware that we need to do something about that. That's the enlightenment part. And then it moves to the repentance part. So we have to repent from what we've done. Part three is about seeking God's forgiveness. And then part four covers baptism and laying on of hands. And then part five, the final part of this lesson, covers the necessity of spiritual growth. As we know that doesn't stop at being baptized and having the Holy Spirit and the laying on of hands. That's just the beginning. Some of us might be able to look at that and say, looking back, maybe that's the easy part. The challenging part is the spiritual growth, right? What we have to do with our lives after we have been forgiven, after we've received the Holy Spirit. In this part five, it provides a reference to the Bible's growth lists. The lesson notes that these lists provide a lifetime of spiritual growth goals. Just as a preview, so you know what I'm talking about, one of those lists, probably the most famous one, is the fruit of the Spirit. And we'll be taking a look at that a little bit later. You know that very well, but that has a list of things. Love, joy, peace. What goes out? Long-suffering. Goodness, let's see, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That's an example, so that gives you an idea of what I'm talking about. So we can take each one of those, and you can use those to help grow as a Christian. So one recommendation I'll offer is leading up to Passover in the spring holidays, may consider in this month of February. Take one or two of these lists that we're about to go through and do a deep dive on the list, or even pick out one or two items from the list that we're going to go through and spend more time on it. Then in March, take another one or two lists and do the same thing. That might be one way that you can help prepare for the Passover. For example, you may have a problem. You may have a problem where you get angry every time the Kansas City Chiefs score a touchdown. And that may just really get you going, and you realize, I need more self-control. I need to not get angry every time Kansas City scores a touchdown, because it happens so often, and I can't be getting angry so often. So self-control might be something you're working on. I'd recommend, even if that's a problem, definitely put that as a high priority for this week, because next Sunday, look out. I say that in jest. I hope you accept that as a little bit of joke, but there is definitely some seriousness in what I'm talking about in terms of using these lists to help with your spiritual growth and, again, potentially help with preparing for the spring holy days. So again, if this idea sounds interesting to you, as we go through the lists, as we go through the items, some of the items in the list, you know, take a note so that you can follow up with these later. So before I go through each of the six lists, I first want to cover a few of the most common traits that are used in these lists. There are four, what I'll call character traits, that are found in three of the six lists. I don't think it would be a surprise to you that when I tell you that love and faith are found in three of the six lists. No surprise. Those are both incredibly important things that we need to be working on in our lives. The other two that, again, are found in three out of the six lists is peace, or being peaceable, and gentle, or gentleness. Both of these are part of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians. Both are listed by James. Both are listed by Paul in Titus. So let's just take a look at, just for a few minutes, let's consider gentleness. And let's look at a few examples of gentleness from the Bible. And we're told that we should be able to give an answer for the hope that lies within us, right? We need to be able to give an answer for what we're doing, why we do what we do. But it tells us in that same verse where it says, be ready to give an answer, tells us we should do this out of gentleness and respect. That's 1 Peter 3:15, if you want the reference there. But when we provide this answer, do this with gentleness and respect. You know, just as some simple examples along these lines, if somebody asks you, why do you keep the Sabbath, right? You can answer that. All of us can pretty easily answer that. When we provide that answer to somebody, do we do that with gentleness and respect? Or do we do that because, hey, open your Bible, dummy? Probably not the best way. Why do we not celebrate Christmas, right? This is one that, you know, we have some opportunity to show gentleness when we respond to people. We are instructed to restore people who are caught in sin. Okay, but how do we do that? That same passage tells us to do this gently. And that's Galatians 6, verse 1. So when we are interacting with people, whether it's people outside of our faith who are asking us about our hope, we interact with them gently. If it's people within our congregation, within our fellowship, who you have a chance to help restore them, we do that gently. Consider the example of Jesus the famous example, when the woman was caught in adultery. She was wrong. Jesus could have kind of brought the law down on her, so to speak. But he interacted, it seems as best as we can read this, he interacted with her in a very gentle way, and he restored her very gently. Not harshly, like the other Jews were trying to do. But he had this gentleness. know, Proverbs explains how a gentle answer turns away wrath. Have you ever considered where you maybe set someone else up to sin because of the way you respond to them? Again, thinking of a simple example, if someone cuts you off in traffic, do you respond in gentleness? Or do you honk? Now, if they're cutting you off and your honking can alert them so they don't pull over and hit you, great use of a horn, it seems like. But when they've already cut you off and it's over, is it time to honk? Or do you ride the bumper? Or do you maybe throw your hands up so they can see you? Are those gentle answers? Or does your response then, they see what you've done, and then that causes them to kind of amp it up a little bit, and they do something else? Maybe they throw their hand up in the mirror for you to see, or maybe they slam on their brakes, or maybe they do something, drive fast, drive slow, but back up a little bit. Was there something you could have done differently to follow this proverb? When they did something wrong to you, maybe it was intentional, maybe it was accidental, did you use a gentle answer so that you helped them and you turned away their wrath instead of making their wrath worse? Jesus, again, with his example, the perfect example, he was gentle to people. He says to those, those you who are weary and burdened, I will give you rest. I will take your yoke from you. He said, I am gentle and I am humble in heart. That's Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Jesus, when we read in, for example, in Revelation that describes, I think it's the first chapter, at the beginning of Revelation that describes Jesus and his power and his might and his beauty, he's so bright that we can't even see him maybe with our own eyes. And yet when he was interacting with people like us, he said, I am gentle. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 40, verse 11. Isaiah 40, verse 11. This is a prophecy about Jesus. Isaiah 40, 11 says, he will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and gently lead those who are with young. And we are to follow Jesus' example. He treated people with gentleness and care. He was gentle to other people. We need to follow this example of his. We need to follow the example of that's in these growth lists that we're going to get to, and be gentle when we're interacting with other people. The other term, the other character traits, very simple, similar to gentleness, but it's peace or being peaceable. Let's look at Romans chapter 12, verse 18. Romans 12, verse 18, talking about being a peaceable person. This one's a challenging verse, or can be. I'm going to read it from the New Living Translation. Romans 12, 18 says, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. With everyone. So I was trying to help us out. I was looking for a loophole on this everyone. I searched all of the other translations with pretty easy to do with an online Bible. But it said, other versions said, all men, everyone, all people, all, everybody, all mankind. I even went so far as I checked the Greek word, did a little research into Greek, and there was no help there. It's everyone. I mean, the one translation that said all men, I don't recommend that you try that and say, well, it says all men, doesn't say all women. I don't recommend going down that path. It says everyone. We have to be making peace. We have to be doing everything we can to make peace with everyone. The way it's written, it does recognize that there are limits. We cannot change other people, but we can change how we interact with people so that we are doing all we can to live peaceably with others. The Beatitudes tells us that the peacemakers are called sons of God. We are told, and we sing about this, right? seek peace, pursue it. This is a very active endeavor. It's not something that it's a passive thing. It's something we have to work at to be peaceable. I look at, kind of consider, at least in my mind, three forms of peace. There's the future peace. So we're looking forward to that future peace when Christ returns, his kingdom is established, Satan's put away. There's going to be such a wonderful peace that comes ahead. And that's the peace that we should be thinking about. And it's in our minds. And it helps to motivate us to do what we're doing. It helps to motivate us to follow what we're going to see in these growth lists. It helps motivate us to be gentle because we know what's coming. That's one form of peace. There's also what I'll call external peace now. So that's in our interactions with other people. And that's what ties back to this Romans 12, verse 18. As much as we can control, we should be making peace with other people. What actions, what things can we do differently? How can we interact with people differently to be peaceable with them? Now, there are times, and there are certain people, maybe the best answer is to stay away from those people, probably for a lot of different reasons. But wherever we can, we should be helping work on this external peace now. And then the third form that I consider is internal peace now. This is the peace that we can control. It's the peace that's within our head. How often is there turmoil in our head because of various stresses, various worries? Maybe it's because of things like pride or vanity, maybe. It's things that we are worrying about that maybe we shouldn't worry quite so much about. So as we are living and pursuing peace, we should consider how can we make more peace inside our head or within the things that we can control, maybe even within our own home. How can we increase the peace that's there? These are just a little dipping in the toe of thinking about how we can use some of these lists and how these lists show us some really important things to help us with our Christian growth. Being gentle, being peaceable, making peace with others, along with love and faithfulness, these must be very important given the frequency at which they're mentioned in these growth lists. All right, let's finally, we'll get to the message finally. We'll cover the six growth lists. So the first one, now I'll give a title to each one of these. I would say, I think the title I'm taking, a little bit adapting or maybe even using directly from the reference material in the Bible study correspondence course. So I'll share a title if you want to jot that down. It's not that important, but it might help you organize your thoughts a little bit or organize your notes. The first one is Elements of Christian Thought and Attitude. And this is in Philippians 4, verse 8. So if you want to be turning over to there, we're going to read this one. Philippians 4, verse 8, very famous verse. Some of you have some or all of this memorized. Philippians 4, verse 8 tells us what to think on. So again, it's elements of Christian thought and attitude. So we'll read Philippians 4, verse 8. It says, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." This one, to me is probably the most different from the next five that we're going to cover. But I also look at this one as this one may help to root out some of the problems or the challenges with following what we're going to cover in the next five. It's telling us how to think or what to think about. You know, if we can do better at following the advice here, I think we're going to have fewer problems in many of the other areas. You know, if we control our thoughts, our actions will be much better in control. As I was reviewing my notes this morning, I thought of an old song. It was by a group, I think, called En Vogue. This song is called, I know some of you will recognize this, at least one or two, but it's, I think either the song title or it goes something like this: "Free your mind and the rest will follow." Now, this is a terrible song, terrible direction, right? But there's some truth to it, right? I mean, if you free your mind, if you put aside everything, the rest, your body, your actions will follow. And that's exactly in the wrong direction. But there's a principle there that if it's applied correctly, will help you in the right direction. Control your mind, control your thoughts, and the rest will follow. If we're in control of what we're thinking about, if we're spending our time thinking about things that are lovely, if we are spending our time thinking about things that are pure, it's going to be a lot harder to take the wrong actions. We're more likely to follow with right actions, with pure actions. If our thoughts are pure, our actions are more likely to be pure. If our thoughts are on things of lovely, that are lovely, our actions are probably going to be more lovely. So again, this is a good verse to go and study and spend time and meditate on these things. Again, helping to control our thoughts, helping us to focus on what's important, helping to focus our thoughts on the good things. So that's the first list. The second one is the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5, 22 to 23, if you want to turn to that one, although, again, most of you will have this either memorized or partially memorized. Let's take a look at the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law." Again, this is the most famous of the lists that we're covering today. Some of you probably learned this verse or these nine fruits of the Spirit, fruit of the Spirit, in children's choir at some point. At least a few of you, I'm sure. An important aspect is that the things that are listed here are what? They're an outcome of being led by the Spirit. It's almost like, if we're being led by God, it's not almost, it is like, if we are being led by God's Spirit, then we are going to be demonstrating each of these nine characteristics that are listed here. We will be loving, kind, and gentle if we are being led by God's Spirit. And of course, we can also turn this around. If things like joy, long-suffering, and self-control are not seen in our lives, we probably have some work to do to better allow God's Spirit to lead us. Because if God's Spirit is leading us, we're going to be demonstrating that fruit. Now, if you want to know, if you have a question, am I filled with God's Spirit? Am I being led by God's Spirit? Test yourself against these nine attributes. Check yourself. Am I loving? Am I faithful? Am I gentle? If the answer is not always, well, you have some work to do. We definitely have some work to do in these areas. I certainly do. I don't know how much to make of this, but of course, in the previous verses is about the works of the Spirit. The works of the Spirit is listed as plural. Works is plural, whereas this is called the fruit of the Spirit. It's not the fruits. Now, maybe fruits is plural or fruits. I don't know how much to make of this, but it's like we need to be demonstrating all of these. You know, if we were doing three out of nine of these, that would be like a .333 batting average, which if you do that for your whole career, you're going to get in the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. If you do 5 out of 9, I mean, that's a majority. That's pretty good. You can get all kinds of laws passed with a majority like that. You can have a lot of success. What about if you do 8 out of 9? If you do 8 out of 9, you're probably going to get an A in almost any course you take. And that's pretty good, right? I'll take an A, kind of walk away feeling pretty good. I did 8 out of 9. I've got my A, my 4.0 GPA. But that's not our standard. Our standard that we need to measure ourselves against is 9 out of 9. We need to be doing all of these. Before moving on to the third growth list, I want to highlight one item from this list, which is only here and not in any of the other growth lists. Which one isn't repeated anywhere else? So that one, it is joy. Joy is found quite a few times in the Bible. I was going to impress you with the number of times joy is used in the Bible, but I would come far short from what Andrew mentioned in terms of how many times time is mentioned in the Bible. So I'm not gonna sell myself short. But actually, joy is used quite a few. I was surprised when I just did a typed in joy into the Bible search program. It came up a lot of times, and it came up quite a few times in the book of Esther. And even a little bit more interestingly is that there was, in the book of Esther, there was the wrong kind of joy and the right kind of joy. It talks about the joy of Haman. So Haman was in the palace, and he was, I guess, having his ego stroked a little bit by the king. And he walks out of the palace, and it says he was full of joy, or it says he had joy until he saw Mordecai. And then his joy went away, and he was angry at Mordecai. And, of course, we know the story. But there is that kind of joy. But then it also goes, as the story goes along, it talks about the joy of the Jews when, of course, they are saved, the right kind of joy. Well, there's not always a time for joy. You know, we can read the famous passage in Ecclesiastes. There's a time for sorrow. There's a time for sadness. There's a time for somber. But there is a time for joy. We should be experiencing joy in our life. And if we're not, we should be considering what is it that gives us joy? Why aren't we having joy in our lives? And we might need to readjust what gives us joy. Let's look at 1 John chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Let's see what's written here about what should be giving us joy. 1 John chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Here it says, that which we have seen and heard, we declare to you, that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things I write to you, that your joy may be full. You know, our relationship with God and his Son, Jesus Christ, should be giving joy in our lives. That's where we should be finding joy. There's other ways to find joy, I believe, as well, but only if they're connected to following God and his way of life. But it's that relationship with God that gives us joy. And if we're not getting that joy there, we probably ought to be working on our relationship with our Father and his Son. That's the kind of joy that we should be seeking. A final note on this fruit of the Spirit. If you do want to do a study in that, Life, Hope, and Truth has an 11-day journey on the fruit of the Spirit. If that's something you're interested in diving into, you can check that out on the website and follow along the study guide there. All right, number three. This one we'll call Virtues of Christian Character. This is in 2 Peter chapter 1. Verses 5 through 7. So if you want to turn to 2 Peter chapter 1, and we'll read 5 through 7. So again, virtues of Christian character. This passage lists 8 virtues that we're told to give diligence to. So starting here in verse 5, it says, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. In this passage, each item in the list builds on top of the other. I think I've heard of this referred to as a ladder passage, because you keep adding on and you keep going higher up on the ladder. And from that analogy, the top rung of this ladder is love. That's absolutely an ultimate goal for us. So are you a loving person? Well, one way to answer that question is to consider this passage and walk up the ladder. Are you kind? Do you demonstrate godliness? Do you have perseverance? Do you maintain self-control? Do you have knowledge? Are you virtuous? Are you faithful? I guess that's kind of walking down the ladder, but you know, if you can answer yes to these questions, then you have a strong case to see that you are loving. We can see how these are building on each other again, ultimately to love. You know, again, love is one way to define or describe our ultimate goal in our Christian walk. You know, one way that God is described in the Bible is stating that God is love. This is simple but very deep. This Christian growth list has six items, by the way, that are in common with the fruit of the Spirit. You know, we can see this connection that with both these lists. Being so closely overlapping to each other, that being a loving person is analogous to someone who's being led by the Spirit of God. So if we're loving, if we're a loving person, if we're a truly loving person, we must be living being led by the Spirit of God. And on the other hand, if we're being led by the Spirit of God, we are a loving person. Both of these things go together. And again, when you think about how to grow, which is our duty to grow as Christians, we can kind of think about that and go back and forth to build on each other and to get better. Am I loving? Okay, I need to work on that more. How can I do that? I can be allowing God's Spirit to lead me more. Am I being led by God's Spirit? Well, do I demonstrate love and all the things that go into love, like we listed in this passage, about being virtuous, about being in self-control, about being faithful. Before we move on to the fourth growth list, consider what is said just before the list begin. It says, we are told, for this very reason, giving all diligence. Well, what reason was given? Well, let's back up in this chapter. We'll read verse 1, and then we'll read verse 4. So verse 1 says, Simon Peter, a bondservant and apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who have attained like precious faith with us by righteousness of our God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. So Peter's writing to fellow Christians. He's not writing to people who don't know God's way. He's writing to people who are dedicated church members. Verse 4 says, by which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in this world through lust. So because we have been given great and precious promises, and because we have escaped the world's corruption, or because we are escaping the world's corruption, we must diligently work on faith, adding virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and love. This is not optional. This is not bonus. This is not extra credit. Because of what we've been given, we must do these things. We must diligently work on these things. Consider the word diligence. Diligence, one definition, is careful and persistent work. Something we have to work hard at. We keep going. We at times absolutely struggle, and it's hard at times, and maybe there are setbacks, but we need to persistently be pursuing these things. The other part of this definition is careful. This is very important. Have you heard the saying, practice makes perfect? You heard that? Somebody told me, and I believe them, that's not true. That's not necessarily true. Because if you practice something the wrong way, you're not going to be perfect. What he told me, and I don't know if he made this up, I suppose he heard this from someone else. It's perfect practice that makes us perfect. So that's part of that term diligence. It's carefully doing the things that we're doing. One of many reasons we come to Sabbath services is so that we can learn perfect practice. And we can take away what we're learning here and put it into our lives by diligently, carefully, and persistently working on these things. Number four is characteristics of godly wisdom. This is in James 3:17. So if you want to look at James, turn to James 3:17. We're going to read this passage. Characteristics of godly wisdom. James 3:17 describes 8 characteristics of godly wisdom. Here it says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. This this passage shows us what our attitude should be like as we are being wise or as we are using our wisdom. Sometimes when you think about a really smart person, you don't always think about them being willing to yield. It's like, they know they're the smartest person in the room, so they don't have to yield because they always know the right answer. But that's not godly wisdom. Are any of you familiar with the Great Brain book series? Have any of you read that? Okay. Only me and my family. Really good books. I don't know. They were fun. So it's about it's a fiction, of course, and it's five or six or eight books, and it's a story of a family. So it's a mother, father, and three boys. And the story is told from the youngest boy tells the story. He's the narrator of the book. And his oldest brother doesn't play in the story too often. His older brother seems typically to be off at a boarding school or off somewhere else. So it's mainly about the younger brother and his middle brother. The middle brother is the great brain. He is smart. And there are a few occasions where he uses his wisdom and his great brain to do something nice. But most of the time, it seems like, at least from what I remember, the great brain was using his wisdom to take advantage of people. He was known as the swindler. He was smart enough to know how to get money from his brother or from the local neighbor boys. One example was that when his mother would make homemade ice cream, she would let the boys, I don't know exactly how this worked, but she would let the boys have the beater or the batter or some parts of the ice cream machine after she was done, and they could have all of scrapings of whatever was left. Well, the great brain studied this. Like, he's like, I want to know how I can get the most ice cream. So he studied this ice cream machine part to know where the ice cream would be hidden the best so that when he would take his spoon or whatever it was, he could get the most ice cream and get more than the others. And the mother would set it up where they had a race across the porch. They would race and then eat as much ice cream as we could. And the great brain, he was not willing to yield. He was not gentle. He was not full of mercy. He was taking advantage of everyone else and using his knowledge to get the most ice cream. He wasn't using his knowledge to show others how to get more ice cream. So this passage says that, you know, as we grow in wisdom, and we need to be growing in wisdom, our wisdom needs to be based on characteristics like things like willing to yield, mercy, and gentleness. When we know how to take advantage of a situation, our wisdom should be based on mercy. We help other people. We are gentle with other people. We use our wisdom in this way. All right, number five. Number five is practical living principles. This is in Titus chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Titus 3, verses 1 through 2 lists practical living principles. This one's a tough one. Not to say that the others aren't tough either, but we're going to get into this and find out why this can be a challenge. It says, remind them to be subject to rulers and authority, to obey, to be ready for every good work, speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. So this is a good list for considering how we are to deal with people in positions over us. Who's in a position over us? Well, depends. I mean, we have a lot of people in various contexts who are over us. Certainly here, we have our pastor, Mr. Winter, is over us. If we're in school or in some kind of class, if you go to the continuing education classes, there'll be an instructor leading the class. That person in that context is over you. The teacher is. A referee in a sporting event is over you. Or it's over the game. Whether we're a fan or a player, how often do referees, how often do we have a challenge with referees? They're in this position of authority, and far too often they are not respected, are they? They're not respected by fans. They're often not respected by players or coaches. I was watching a minor league baseball game a number of years ago, and it just struck me. I mean, you've seen this, you've heard this before, you've seen it where a coach runs out and just starts yelling at the umpire. And I'm at this minor league baseball game where, I mean, how much does this game really matter? Probably a lot to the players, a lot to the coach, but there's this man who, probably in his 50s, a coach, and he is right up in this umpire's face, just yelling and just angry and yelling and yelling. And I'm just looking at that. And if I were, by the way, if I were in the position of the coach, if I felt like I was wrong, I might have a little different point of view. I hope certainly that I would not act like him, but I just couldn't believe it. I was just watching him. And a coworker of mine's son was sitting there, an 8-year-old boy, and I'm just embarrassed. Like I'm like embarrassed because this boy is watching this adult man, this adult yelling at this coach. I couldn't believe it. But this is a challenge, right? In some form or another. So maybe we don't yell. Maybe we don't do that. But what's in our thoughts, or what are our conversations with our spouse or our mate about people who are over us? I think I've heard this term, but or something along these lines, that Sunday afternoon after church, what do people have for dinner? They have roast pastor or something like that, right? So you go home and just roast the pastor for all the things that he did. This is a passage. It's a great passage to remind us how we need to be thinking about what is our attitude towards people who are over us. You know, here's a test that I think many Americans, probably you could fill probably any person in any country with any ruler, but you know, for us Americans, many would have struggled with this. Have you ever spoken evil of President fill in the blank? Whichever president, whatever people's feelings are, or political alliances are, have they ever spoken evil of that person? Well, Titus, in this practical living principles, helps us to understand how we should be interacting and how we should be thinking about it and how we need to be subject to the rulers over us. All right, the final one, characteristics to abound in. Final list. This is in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 7. So if you want to turn there. Characteristics to abound in. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 7, Paul encourages us to abound in six things. Here it says, But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. You know, this is not a list of things to do. This is a list of things to abound in. Let me test your skills at visualizing. Think about wild flowers abounding in a meadow. How many wildflowers are you picturing? Is it one here, one there, one over here? You're probably going to see dozens, hundreds, thousands. How about this one? Off the beaches in the Bahamas, marine life abounds. What do you see? Whether you've experienced this yourself with snorkeling or scuba diving, or whether you've seen videos of this, but just dozens and dozens and dozens of fish. You're just surrounded by fish. It's abounding. That's a good way to look at this. We should be abounding in things. And when we look at this list, abounding in knowledge, abounding in faith, seems a little bit understandable, okay? But what does it mean to abound in speech? What is that like? Let's look at our last passage. Is Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. What does it mean to abound in speech? Does that mean to talk and talk and talk and never stop talking? I'm doubting that. I'm going to read from this English Standard Version. It says, "Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt." You know, our speech must abound in graciousness and seasoned with salt. Now, salt is something that adds flavor. I enjoy eating a ripe tomato, but ripe tomatoes, they just call out for salt. And for me, at least, you know, the tomato is the message. Like, what is your speech? What is the message you're sharing with somebody? But adding that salt to the tomato makes the message full of flavor. It makes it so much more enjoyable. You know, we should be abounding in our speech to others. When we are interacting with people, we should be full of graciousness. And what we're saying should be come across, think about it, as coming across as flavorful to others. Should be something that's enjoyable and helpful. And the last item on this list, the last item we'll finish with, is grace. And good news, if you want to dive into grace again, you probably just received a booklet. At least I did. We got ours this week. So there's a perfect way for you to study into grace as we are starting to close out this message. So again, if you think it would be helpful, dig into one or more of these lists. And then go deeper into one or more of the items on the list. You know, if you're a systematic person, you could even create a plan to cover each list and to cover each item within the list. But however you approach these things, these lists are excellent tools to help with your growth.
Thank you, Mr. Yost.